Chapter 12. Sitir's Breath. A U-shaped valley snaked down from the corrie, terminating suddenly in a vertiginous drop half a kilometre away, a legacy of harder glaciations and past tectonic upheavals. Framed by its end were the forests and plains around the Volda Hamaki. The valley funneled storm breezes that chased themselves up the mountain vale as a hot, steady wind. The reduced group made their way to the ritual circle. It was set on a nub of hard volcanic rock, different in type to the surrounding slate. At the centre was a slight dimple, not apparent from the platform overlooking the town. From within shone a yellow light. Smoke rose up and blew across the ground, splitting apart on the sharp stones. The menhir, carved to resemble the fang, stood guard over the hole, its belly tinted orange by the world fire. Leman Russ walked over to the hole. The smell of hydrogen sulfide made him turn his face aside. He could not look directly down the hole for long. When he did, heat curled his hair and beat him back. He stepped away with a brief impression of infinite depth and the world forge churning in the world's heart. Kvar had his twin guardians carry him to the edge of the ritual circle.
"That is Sitir's door, the soul forge, the entrance to his kingdom of the dead."
"I have not seen it before," said Russ.
"You have seen the cavity?"
"I have passed it, yes. It is a circle of skulls with a crack in the rock, no more remarkable than any of the crack guard sites." "I paid it no attention," said the Primarch. "This is a place for Goti's business."
"Often the mysterious is hidden in plain sight. Sitir's door is active only on this day."
Kvar shifted in the chair.
"In one respect, it is a volcanic vent of unusual properties, a geological oddity. In another respect, it is a door to the underverse. What do you, O son of the Emperor, believe it to be?"
Russ stared at the hole which led to the glowing heart of the world. He understood the volcanic processes which could lead to this unusual phenomenon well enough, the rational explanation. Then he looked to his goatee and the skulls and the runes, and he knew in his heart what it truthfully was.
"It is the entrance to the underverse," he said.
Kvar nodded.
"There is ice, there is fire, water, and air, and spirit."
He pointed his staff at the glacier, the vent, the tarn, the sky, and Leman Russ.
"And there is earth."
At the pronouncement of this word, the twin guardians lowered Kvar to the ground. The feet of his chair touched the stone. He drew strength from it, and his disability seemed less pronounced.
"The elements of Fenris are together in balance in this place. You embody its soul. Only you can make this journey. It can only be done now, and it can only be done with our help."
He gave two sharp rattles of the bones on his staff. The goatee arranged themselves into a circle between the poles and their necklaces of skulls. Russ stared at Kvar. No trace of a librarian of the Legiones Astartes was evident in this man, nor in any of the others. They were pagan priests, runecasters, ice shamans. Kvar cracked his staff upon the stone three times. On the fourth strike, the other goatee began to hammer the butts of their staves into the ground. In time with their slow rhythm, they chanted. First one began to sing, then the next, and so on until all seven of them repeated hypnotic phrases timed with the striking of their staffs that overlaid and interwove with each other as intricately as knotwork.
"Fenris is at its perigee," said Kvar. "It is the solstice, the absolute height of summer. Hearken to me, Lord of Winter and War. Within the underverse you will encounter uncanny beings, whites and worse. Dealing with these beings requires the focus and poise of a duel. Never let your guard down. You may drink of their miod and ale, but take none of their white meat, or you will be lost in the underverse forever. Answer no questions, lest they snare you in their webs of deceit. Treat them nobly, as you would a mortal lord, and they will provide what you wish to learn, though you may not like the answers, and there will be a cost. Come to me.
Russ walked over to the crippled priest's chair. The chanting of the other goatee made him woozy, and he walked unsurely, like he had stepped onto dry land from the rocking deck of a ship after a long, rough voyage. Kavar gestured to him. Russ bent low.
More than anything, remember, my lord, what you are,
whispered Kavar, so quietly no other could have heard. Russ nodded.
I am Leman Russ.
No, said Kavar. This is who you are.
And he spoke a name Russ had never heard into his ear. A name he knew, without being told, had been intended for him before he had been stolen away from Terra. The name affected him. Russ's ears buzzed. He stood tall in wonder, head spinning. Kavar's ruined face filled his world.
Remember that you are more than a wolf. Are you ready?
Yes, he said.
Go to the door and look within.
Russ walked somnolently to the vent. The heat made him hesitate.
Stare into it, said Kavar. Do not fear the heat. The ice in your soul will protect you.
In a state of detachment, he put his head over the hole, full into the rush of hot gases. His skin prickled prior to roasting. He felt his body rally itself to repair the damage. He burned, but as quickly as he burned, he healed. It was nevertheless agonizing.
There can be no gain without suffering, said Kavar. Everything given by the underverse requires a sacrifice. Do you accept this, my Jarl?
I do,
said Leman Russ through gritted teeth. The chanting of his priests mingled with the pulse of pain afflicting his face. He was light-headed from holding his breath against the burning gases.
Then breathe deeply of Sitir's breath, and farewell. You and I shall not meet again in this life.
Russ hesitated only for an instant before he filled his lungs with searing air. His mouth burned, his throat burned, his lungs wilted. The chants of the priests droned louder than battle's noise, and Russ thought he had been tricked and would die, a victim of the witches he had naively fostered. The vent in the ground rushed towards him, gaping like a maw, and Leman Russ fell from this world into some other place. Sitir's door had opened. Winter footsteps make a particular sound. The crunch squeak of air in compressing snow, the shush slide of feet displacing delicate crystals. It is the sound of peace. It is the sound of death. Death to be out in inimical seasons, when more sensible creatures sleep. Peace to be had in the emptiness of the world, where a man might be one and alone under the vaults of creation, with nothing to trouble him. There are no boundaries between life and death in a landscape like that. They lose their divide. It is an easy landscape to learn from, equally easy to vanish in, to let the body cool and the soul rise. An easy landscape to give into. Russ knew the sound of winter footsteps as well as his heartbeats. Whiteness faded to blue gloom. His mouth popped open, and he sucked in a gusting breath. Lungs that had burned now froze with painful air. His eyes were already open, for their moist surface was chilled by the cold, as if some enchantment were lifted. Now they saw. The footsteps were his. He was walking across a crisp snowfield, his feet plunging through the crusted surface to the powder beneath. Each step buried his legs to the knee. He slowed, and stopped. The field of night lit the world a subtle blue. A billion ice crystals winked at a billion stars in cosmic flirtation. Leman Russ turned around on the spot. Though he had heard his footsteps and felt his forward motion, there were no tracks leading to where he stood. Snow lay undisturbed on the flat plain. In every direction, the hard blue-white horizons met the blue-black sky at an uncompromising edge. Cold bit at his shins like iron. Cold raked his lungs like claws. The stars were alien, the chill deeper than the deadliest Fenrisian night. Were it not for his Primarch's body, he would be dead already. Russ had learned at the side of the Emperor. There were no gods, no real magic, no dream quests or visions. These things were experienced, were manifestations of the warp filtered by the human consciousness. They were not, in an objective sense, real. There were the sciences of the mind. There were the sciences of the soul. This was the imperial truth as he taught it. Before the Emperor, Russ had learned at the feet of Goethe. He was raised with a belief in wights and ghosts, where Kaboldir and Vengir crept from the underverse to add supernatural peril to a world already crammed with mortal dangers. In that belief system, such places as Russ now travelled were as real as the waking world, and far more deadly. Alone in the snowfield, Russ knew what he believed. Russ had seen too many supposedly unreal things that had proved to be all too real. He was wise enough to know that whether something was real or not was irrelevant. The better question was, could it kill him? Kvar had said yes. Kvar was rarely wrong. The burns he had suffered at the door were gone. His ritual leathers were missing, and he was dressed in a suit of skins from many wolves, inexpertly cut and stitched to fit his giant's body, their tails dangling from odd places. It was a mockery of a chieftain's garb, the sort the trickster wore in the saga tellings. He noted that well. Not that it mattered. Nothing would, if he didn't get out of the cold. Constellations of runes joined star to star. When he looked askance, he could see the lines between, drawn in starlight, but when he moved to better see, they vanished back into the dark. One collection he recognised, a jumble of marks that, if looked at in a certain way, defined the outline of a Gloriana-class void ship. This too vanished when he looked too hard. His own, he wondered, or Horus's? A single drawn-out howl sounded to his left. Russ whirled, clouds of ice smoke issuing from his mouth as profusely as that from Snowdrake. A lone wolf sat far away, close to the horizon. Its black pelt blended with the night sky behind it. Even with his Primarch's eyes, Russ could barely see it. A flash of white teeth and yellow eyes, and it headed away. Russ's face set. Without a second thought, he broke into a running pursuit. The Arctic wastes went on for leagues. The wolf ran hard, and Russ pounded after, never falling behind, yet never gaining either. The air burned his lungs. The back of his throat tasted of chilled copper. The insides of his nostrils crackled and stung, all the moisture frozen from them. He yanked a wolf tail from his motley suit and clamped it in his teeth. It tasted rank, stank of musk, and was soon covered in ice from his breathing, but it stopped his lungs from turning into blocks of frozen meat. On he ran, never faltering. His feet numbed in his boots, his gloveless hands cramped into claws. He did not stop. Ahead of him, the wolf loped onwards. Glimmering crystals burst from its every footfall, but its feet did not sink into the snow, and it left not a trace of its passing. Russ, in comparison, stumbled often, his feet swallowed by unseen dips. More than once he blundered into snow that came up to his chest. When it seemed the wolf would vanish ahead, the deeper snow would end, and Russ would stumble forwards, cursing the ways of all priests between ragged pants. For hours they ran. The light never changed. The sun did not rise. Finally, as his lungs burned like molten metal, and his extremities felt the early gnawing of frostbite, a yellow light appeared over the horizon. Russ was too exhausted to cheer. He pushed himself on in the trail of the wolf all the harder. The wolf slowed. The light split into two, then three, then more, becoming many small windows in the low walls of a chieftain's longhouse. Like an upturned wolf boat 50 meters long, its roof swirled generously in the middle, tapering towards either end, where crossed angular posts tipped with carven wolf's heads made frames to support the central beam. A thick covering of snow hid the shingles of the roof and lay piled in delicate towers upon the posts. Light poured from a smoke hole, and from the open gates fires cast a great yellow trapezium of light upon the ground. Slowing further, the wolf approached, and as it neared, it lost some of the form of a wolf. With a bound, it skipped from four to two legs, its forelimbs changing shape and becoming like the arms of a man. In the next few steps, its shoulders broadened, its rear legs lengthened. In all other respects, it remained a wolf, hirsute, so dark it looked like a shadow upon the light patch of snow. Its hands were clawed, and though it walked upright, the hind legs retained a wolf's configuration of hock, stifle, and pastern. The man-wolf howled to announce its presence and swaggered into the hall. Russ jogged up. He could not see beyond the light within. Despite the killing cold, the windows were unshuttered, as though the hall's master was enjoying the few gentle days of a Fenrisian spring before the summer of the wolf's eye cast all into ruin. Russ held up his hands to his eyes to shade them, but could see no better into the light. There was only one course of action open to him. Leman Russ set his shoulders and strode within the hall.